Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. The Craters of the Moon National Monument and Preserve is located in southern Idaho in the middle of the Snake River Plain, halfway between Yellowstone National Park and Boise, Idaho. It encompasses about 11,000 square miles, an area about the size of the state of Rhode Island. In this special and unique part of the Earth, lava has flowed regularly from 50-mile-long deep open rift cracks approximately every 2,000 years, beginning 15,000 years ago. The last flow occurred approximately 2,100 years ago, and another eruption is considered by many knowledgeable people to be due now. This area is so much like the surface of the moon that the astronauts who prepared for the second lunar landing in 1970 went to the Craters of the Moon National Monument and Preserve to train for their landing on the moon. I visited the Craters of the Moon on September 18th and 19th, 2014, meeting first with Ted Stout, Chief of Interpretation and Education at Craters of the Moon National Monument and Preserve, and then with Doug Owen, a geologist and national park ranger. When Ted Stout and I met, I asked him to begin with a description of the land within the preserve, what it looked like, and where it is located.
Unfortunately, your radio listeners can't see this.
But we're pretty good at describing this.
Okay. But if you go on Google Earth, or that's one of the best places to see these satellite views like this, you can easily find craters in the moon because it's an enormous province of lava.
How large in acres or square miles?
So it's about 1,100 square miles, 750,000 acres. The monument and preserve, shown by the boundary here, is about the size of the state of Rhode Island. And the scenic loop drive that I understand you're going to go and check out covers just a small portion of that, but it's really the most dynamic part of the landscape.
What about it is dynamic?
It just has an amazing assemblage of volcanic features in a relatively compact area, and they're very well preserved because of our dry climate that we have here.
What are some of those features?
So some of those features you can see are cinder cones. We have about 25 within the monument. We also have numerous lava flows. There's about 60 different lava flows.
Can you tell us about some of the features and the unique aspects of the lava flows that are on the two-mile circuit, right very close to the visitor center here?
Yeah, it's actually a seven-mile scenic drive, and it goes through a very dynamic landscape where we have had lava flows and cinder cones and other volcanic features form as recently as 2,000 years ago. So the scale of time represented by these young lava flows is about 15,000 years ago to 2,000 years ago. And because of our dry climate, things are very well preserved. Some of it looks like it came out last Thursday. It's just amazing how fresh and new some of the lava
What does it look like when it's fresh and new lava?
Well, if you got on a plane and flew to Hawaii and went to another national park, Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, you would be able to see this young lava, you know, actually coming up out of the ground and flowing across the landscape. They've had a continuous eruption, very similar to what you see here at Craters of the Moon here in Idaho since 1983.
That's in Hawaii, where it's still viscous and coming out of the ground.
Exactly.
But it's not that way here at Craters of the Moon.
No, the most recent eruption was about 2,000 years ago.
But now that's all solid.
That is solid.
And you are talking about how unique it looks.
Yeah. So
what does it look like?
It looks like broad areas of lava, stone, and then also fields of cinder, which are the lightweight lava rocks that are basically lava foam.
So which is used for pumice and rubbing the feet
by
some.
Yeah, pumice is usually the more silica-rich type of lava, but in your gas grill, if you look in there, you'll see cinders.
And the other lava, is that smooth and shiny?
Some of it is, and actually we have rather unique lava here that is coated with a thin layer of glass. And one of our most famous lava flows here is called the Blue Dragon Flow, and it has a bluish color to the exterior. The flow is quite beautiful in areas.
What is the source of the blueness? Is that unique to craters of the moon or lava flows in general?
We think it's some kind of titanium oxide or some other chemical that causes it to reflect blue like that. But basically, it's just where the margin of the flow was chilled by the air and turned into glass.
So the circumstances of weather at the time of the eruption would do that.
Yeah, and just the fact that our lava here, as opposed to Hawaii, is a little more silica-rich because it's in a continental setting as opposed to being out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
So looking again at this area that has so many different aspects of the lava flow. Mm-hmm. What does the information there teach us about the world?
I think the thing that people take away from this place is the Earth is a very dynamic place, and it has changed dramatically in the past. And the exciting thing about this lava flow is we don't think we're finished. If you look at the geologic record, it's erupted roughly every 2,000 years over the last 15,000 years. The last eruption was about 2,000 years ago, so we fully expect that we will have future events here at some point. Probably not during your visit, Barry, but maybe one of these days.
Well, that'd be exciting if it were.
Yeah.
Are there ways to predict when there would be an eruption or an occurrence of a new flow?
Absolutely. We do have a seismometer that would pick up the signature of the magma pushing its way back up through the Great Rift, and that would give us some early warning.
How deep is the magma when it starts to come toward the surface?
You know, people are always confused when they see craters of the moon, because when you think about a volcano, usually you think about a tall, conical-shaped mountain like Mount Fuji or Mount Rainier or something like that. But here, it's relatively flat and spread over a large area. Our volcano is not a large cone. It's actually a big crack in the earth. And you can actually see this on the satellite photo. You can see the line coming down here. You can see these lines coming down here. This is a volcanic fissure.
And this is
where the lava, where the magma pushed its way up through the earth and then came out onto the surface.
And that's what you refer to as the rift.
And this particular rift zone is known as the Great Rift.
Mm-hmm. Great because?
Because it's one of the longest and deepest in the lower 48.
How long is it?
It's about 50 miles.
And how deep?
Some very courageous explorers have actually gone down into sections of this, and they've gone down 300, 400 feet into the earth.
How do they do that?
By rappelling down into it. There's some sections way down here that are extremely deep.
Is it dark down there?
Quite dangerous to go into, actually. I wouldn't do it. But in this area, the eruptions were so voluminous that you can't really see the cracks, but you can see the alignment of the cones from south east to northwest along that fracture.
And where you're looking at is the northwest end where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And the distance long that you mentioned, you said the whole thing was 50-something, but
yeah,
this is...
Yeah, so the rift basically goes from where we are now, which is way up here. Here's the highway you can see. And it comes down like this all the way to here.
Which is about how many miles?
About 50 miles.
So tell us about the open areas closer to the visitor center and the campground and the walks.
You know, with the history of craters of the moon consists of, you know, these eruptive periods over the last 15,000 years. And each different eruptive period created lava flows. And then on top of that, new flows overlapped and cinder cones were created. So what you're seeing on the satellite photo are different textures of lava. Some of them are due to the different ages of the lava. The longer the lava sits on the surface, the more likely it is to be covered with windblown soil and vegetation. And you can tell in general how old our cones are just by, you know, looking at them and seeing how vegetated they are. The really barren ones are quite young. The ones with lots of vegetation are older.
And the quite young ones, if I understood you correctly, are about 2,000 years old.
Exactly, yes.
And the old ones, 15,000.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Earlier you said that there appear to be eruptions about every 2,000 years, and the last one was 2,000 years, and there are ways of identifying that an eruption would come.
Yes.
Have you seen any?
We have detected some minor, very minor swarms of earthquakes directly beneath us that indicate that the magma's sort of stirring around. But nothing to get real excited about yet.
Mm-hmm. Is there any connection between the magma here and the eruptions in Yellowstone, which is about 200 miles from here?
Yes, there is a connection between the two, meaning that this area was Yellowstone about 8 million years ago.
When you say was Yellowstone,
yes.
What does that mean?
Meaning that the Yellowstone hotspot, which feeds Yellowstone and causes all the geyser activity and such that people come from all around the world to see, that hotspot is stationary, and the North American plate has moved over that over the last 16 million years or so. And at one point, that hotspot was directly beneath where we are now. But the North American plate moved over that, and now it's underneath Yellowstone. So the amazing thing about the Snake River Plain is that the mountains that characterize most of the state of Idaho used to cover the Snake River Plain as well, but they were destroyed and devoured by these enormous supervolcanoes that erupted across the plain. And these were volcanic eruptions on a scale that nobody living has ever witnessed, and we all hope we never will, because it changed the world's climate. It devastated, you know, the entire region. And so they were truly on a massive scale.
Do you have a sense of when they occurred? How long ago?
Yes, yes. So like I said, the one that occurred here was about 8 million years ago. The last one to occur was the one that created Yellowstone itself about 600,000 years ago.
So going back to the measurement device where you've seen a little bit of agitation in the magma,
yeah.
Is there any way to eventually identify the extent of what a lava flow or an eruption might be before it begins?
Yeah, so going from Yellowstone, which is this massive, massive supervolcano, to what you see now on the surface here, these lava flows were much more gentle. Don't think Yellowstone, don't think Mount St. Helens, think Hawaii. So the future eruptions that we have will be more of a gentle outpouring of lava, and perhaps the production of more cinder cones here. Yellowstone itself might blow again at some point, and that would be one of those massive super volcanoes, but we don't have to worry about that right here. Although if Yellowstone goes, then the whole state goes. So.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Ted Stout, who is the interpretive director of the geological history at Craters of the Moon National Monument and Preserve. This is Radio Curious on Tour, and I'm Barry Vogel. I met with Doug Owen, who for the past 19 years has worked as a geologist and national park ranger at Craters of the Moon National Monument and Preserve. As we walked around and looked at the current topography on a very windy morning, you'll hear the wind as part of our recording, he began with a description of some of the volcanic features currently found at the Craters of the Moon. Doug Owen describes the barn-sized blocks of lava, which congealed and floated on the molten lava for up to a distance of 7 miles.
This area over here is called Devil's Orchard, and we were talking about those blocks a minute ago. They got floated off, kind of like icebergs. These are some of those blocks, and if you look at them, some of them are literally the size of a warehouse. They were huge chunks of the cinder cones that got carried off, and some of these got drug out as much as 7 miles from where they came from, that north wall and north crater, and from South Highway Cone now that's largely missing. And that's kind of an interesting thing to think about. Just for these big guys right here, you know, we're getting, oh, roughly a mile and a half or so away from where they originated. And look at that one. That one over there is just immense. I mean, that's literally the size of a warehouse, but that's a section of crater that was floated away like an iceberg.
That's the section of the earth of the crater that was floated in the lava to this
Correct.
Position.
Yeah.
It's not congealed magma.
Well, it was initially ejected from a vent and formed a cone. Sometimes they're hot enough they kind of weld together so it's coherent and not just loose cinder. And then later these really thick pasty flows literally tore the cone apart and floated away sections of the cone and the crater walls.
When you say pasty flows, are you implying that some of the flows are more viscous than others?
And, yes, absolutely. Very much so.
What is the geological background of the difference of the viscosity?
Well, there's actually a number of reasons. One of the big ones is silica content, it's chemistry. The higher the silica content to the flow, the thicker and pastier these flows are. If there's a lot of crystals that have started to form in the magma chamber from beginning to cool, that can make the lava pastier. Whether it has dissolved gases and things like water fluids in it, that kind of thing actually tends to make them runnier unless the bubbles have started to come out of solution. And if they're coming out of solution, then that tends to make it pastier again. So, and then temperature. The cooler it is, the pastier it tends to get. It becomes more of a mush as it's cooling than if it's very hot and very fluid. So really big one, chemistry. Not really big one, temperature, and then some of these other factors come into play too. This is Inferno Cone, that's another cinder cone. This one over here is called Paisley, and it was named after the first caretaker of the park, and today we call those people superintendents, but they were known as caretakers back in the 1920s. This one in front of us is Big Craters. So yes, these are all cinder cone volcanoes.
How many volcanoes are in the park?
Total number I couldn't tell you. In the Craters of the Moon field where we are right now, there's 25 major cones. In the expanded monument, you know, there's a bunch of these older cones. I'm not exactly sure what the total would be on those. But you know, I don't know, probably 30, 40, I'm guessing, something like that.
The cone that we're passing now looks like it's fairly clear of any growth. That's an indicator that it is a newer, younger cone?
Actually, this one is kind of middle-aged. What the barrenness is telling you is that there's active erosion and transport of sediment that keeps the plants abraded away. And so this is in the facing windward to the prevailing winds. And so an awful lot of that cone, it's very hard for life to get established on because of sediment literally sandblasting it, if you will. And that's why it's barren. It also faces south, so it's baking in the sun all day long. So there's more incoming solar radiation, less water available because of, you know, it being evaporated by the wind, etc. Whereas if you're on a north-facing slope, it's much more hospitable. You're in the lee of prevailing winds, get deposition of more soil, less solar radiation, more moisture is available because of less solar radiation. It's a lot easier to live.
You can hear Doug Owen and I breathing as a result of climbing up to the top of a spatter cone at the altitude of 6,000 feet. Spatter cones form at the end of a volcanic eruption sequence and create sticky piles of cooler lava that gather together to form a cone.
Well, this is a spatter cone, and it gets that name because if you look at it, you see all these globs that were ejected as spatter, and it's kind of loosely cemented together. But then we have some here that was hot enough and fluid enough that it was oozing back into the vent, this hole in front of us. And so you can think of this as a throat lining. And that's kind of cool. This is the only spatter cone out of this little chain of them where the throat lining has been well preserved. Most other places it's already flaked off. But here you get to see that throat lining. And you can see it's hosting, you know, bryophytes, these mosses here, and a whole variety of lichens here in different colors as well. The other thing that's really kind of special about this one is you get what's called little buds. And these little things over here are little buds. They're part of the globs that were ejected that had enough pressure and enough fluid left in them that they just expanded out and inflated, like inflating little balloons. And that's in essence what these globs were. These globs were throwing out. We talked about the pressure earlier. These things are coming out of solution, the gases. And in this case, then some of the more fluid parts are getting driven out to make these little buds that we see here. And then if we look at the corner over here, and here, you know, you can literally stick your arm in it. And so these globs have gone poof. And many, many of them are hollow, even though they may look solid to the untrained eye. They're actually hollow. As you walk back down the trail, you can see that these things, you know, where the top's broken off here, you know, there was hollow in there. And you can see a hollow in right here and a hollow right there. So I really like to think of this as almost a popcorn pile, because all these globs just popped and inflated because of the fluids and gases that were dissolved in them. They get up here, puny column of air, and go poof. And so these are really kind of cool, besides being some of the most accessible spatter cones on the planet, like we said, just a couple hundred feet from the parking lot.
And the globs here, these look much more fist size and bigger than the ones that you were speaking of a few minutes ago that looked about thumb size.
Yes, yes.
Those
little buds are actually stuff that was inside these globs. There was still a little more fluid and it got squirted out.
cooled pretty quickly, so it got this little bit of a glassy crust. You saw the sheen, kind of submetallic in appearance on the surface of it. So that was just actually some contents that were inside an individual glob.
Finally, National Park Ranger and geologist Doug Owen describes basalt, the dark to medium-colored intrusive rock in this area, basic to the Craters of the Moon National Monument and Preserve.
And for these basalt rocks that we're looking out for miles looking off here to the south, you know, there is roughly 6,000 feet of basalt out there, and there's been 8,000 events to produce all of that basalt. For millions of years, this kind of basaltic activity's been going on because we keep stretching the crust. A good example of that would be Mount Bora, which had a magnitude 6.9 earthquake back in 1983. And so that tells us Basin Range Extension is alive and well. And, you know, as long as that's happening, all these hot rocks left behind by the hot spot, there'll be more of these eruptions eventually. The planet's not done. Yeah, she's still tinkering. Okay. I mean, this Basin Range is extension. We're at the northern end of the Basin Range province. At some point in time, you know, Baja and the Gulf of California is going to dump into Death Valley, and we're just at the northern edge of where someday there will be a new sea. But, you know, millions upon millions of years into the future. So, you know, it's a dynamic place. It's not static. It's ever-changing.
Well, Doug Owen, I want to thank you for sharing your time with us on Radio Curious here at
Craters of the Moon.
Here at Craters of the Moon National Park.
Yes. My pleasure. It was fun.
This interview about the geological phenomena known as Craters of the Moon National Monument and Preserve was recorded at the Craters of the Moon National Monument and Preserve on September 18th and 19th, 2014. There are over 500 archive editions of Radio Curious on our website, www.radiocurious.org, where they're free for you to stream, download, enjoy, and share. We appreciate your curiosity, ideas, comments, and questions. You may reach us by email. Our address is curious@radiocurious.org or snailmail 280 North Oak Street, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California 95482, or by phone 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. Christina Onnestad is our associate producer, and I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.